let's get on with this Good Samaritan and let's get back to the Didge. All right. Now, I'm sure this is a story you've all heard before. Have you all heard of this story before? Or have you all heard of the phrase, the Good Samaritan?
Yep.
Yeah, the Good Samaritan. So it's a, look, at one level, this kind of story should be a lay down mazair for the Wayside Chapel, right? You know, we should just about post it up on the front, clean up a bit of the language. But, you know, it's quite simple at a surface level, isn't it? That says life as we know it can rip the rug out from under us at any time and can punch us right in the guts, you know, without warning. And we can end up beaten up and broken down on the side of the road. We never know how it's going to happen. I got three phone calls this week, you know. One of our workers, you know, he's found out he's got cancer, has returned to his body, and he's having another round of treatment, which he was not expecting. A dear friend's dad, who's been on the waiting list for a kidney transplant, finally got the news that there was a kidney available, and on the operating theatre, he had a heart attack and passed away. So what was going to be this great moment of joy for the family turned out to be horrible. And I sat with a girl, the park the other day in our beautiful NAIDOC celebrations, who is finding out with much trepidation whether her third pregnancy is going to be a sustainable one. You know, life can do that without any warning. And at one level, this is a really simple story that says that those of us who haven't been kicked in the guts should not walk past our brothers and sisters who have, right? Who can walk on the side of the, you know, we need to get off our donkeys and walk alongside our brothers and sisters. And that's a beautiful call in and of itself. A beautiful call. There is something a bit deeper to this, though. You know, these stories, think about the Bible as a bunch of stories. And it's a bunch of stories that have been told and retold and continue to be told by groups and communities all around the world from thousands of years ago to this very day. And we turn them around and we question them and we look at them from different angles. And there's another level here that I want us to look at this. There's no one point of view that's correct. It's like a 70-faced diamond. And I want us to turn this over because this story contains something within it that is far more challenging, far deeper, far more transcendent, and far more earthy if we're prepared to let it speak from a different angle. A couple of things I'll just share with you about this. So Jesus meets a lawyer. A lawyer back in those days is not what we think of as a lawyer today. Right? Back then, this kind of lawyer would have been someone whose job was to learn and interpret and to wrestle with what the religious law was, what the religious rules were. And so the fact that he asked Jesus a question was very common in his day. You remember we talked a couple of weeks ago, if you were here, about the importance of questions and not just asking questions, but learning to live the questions and learning to love the questions. Because then we may be able to live out an answer. And so to meet a rabbi, you would naturally engage in a bit of a to and forth, in a bit of a question and answer session. And so he asked him a question. You know, Jesus was asked 153 questions and he only answered three directly, right? Try that on your high school assignments, right? Probably won't go very well. But so this question is asked. And he says, you know, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Now, something important I need to tell you about here is the person who asked it was a Jewish teacher, scribe of the law. And if you talk to people who are of the Jewish faith today, and all the way through, is they don't mean what happens to me after I die. What happens to me? Do I go to heaven? How do I have life after death? They rarely, if ever, talk about life after death. What they are actually asking is, how am I to live now? How am I to live in such a way that I live in peace and harmony with my community and peace and harmony with my God? So he was asking, how am I meant to live today? How am I meant to live the life I'm meant to live? And Jesus responds by asking him a question. He says, you know, what does the law say? And he answers. He answers from the ancient scriptures, which says, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Do this and love your neighbor as yourself. Do this and you'll live. Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. Now, if we could just stop right there. You know, that we could take it at that level, right? And that's great. If we were to take care of each other, if we were to take care of our brothers and sisters who have been broken up and beaten down, this world would be a better place. These tribes who told these stories, though, were telling a story that was very different. You know, loving your community and loving God as yourself and loving your community as yourself, that's like an in-house call. Do you remember in high school, sometimes the speaker comes on and it's the principal and you all get worried and the principal says, the principal would like to see the following students in his office. John Owen. I remember that happened once, well, actually about five times. And I don't know why they use the word the plural, students. It was just one student. And, you know, it's an in-house call. Do you remember those days? Have you ever had your name read out over the loudspeaker? Yeah. You pretend like you're a hero. Yeah, boys, let me take my punishment. But internally you're saying, what did I do now? I don't even know. But that didn't satisfy this teacher of the law, and some people say that he was trying to test Jesus, and it kind of says that in the scripture anyway. But you know, for some of us here, it's life's more than just taking care of our own. In fact, that's how the world operates. And this set of tribes, though, they were telling a different kind of story. They were saying that our tribes are not just meant to take care of ourselves, but we're meant to take care of others. We're meant to make this world a better place as we know it. You know, these blessings that we receive aren't just for us, they're for the world. And so that's the context. So he's pushing Jesus, and Jesus tells him this amazing story that's meant to blow our minds. And it should blow our minds. A couple of weeks ago when we were on holiday, we Googled around and saw in Bali you can climb up a volcano and eat a cooked banana at the top. I don't know why that kind of makes it a greater option when you can cook a banana at the top. But, you know, in my mind, when we booked it, we thought there'd be a nice, smooth path up to the top of the volcano. And then we did it. We said, let's not do the morning one. Let's do the sunset one. And halfway up, you realise it's just volcanic rock that you, if you fell over and broke your ankle, there's no plan B. You know, you're sleeping in the night on that mountain. And, you know, up that narrow path. Now, when you hear this story, it's a bit of a joke. There's no other side of this narrow path. What the story is saying is, don't walk past someone. It's saying don't walk over someone. All right? Don't walk over someone who's right in front of you. And so the first person walks over him, the second person walks over him, and all the punch is packed into the third character, who comes out of nowhere, who Jesus says is a Samaritan. Now, a little bit of backstory here. The Samaritans were despised by the teachers of the law back then. This was a person picked out as someone who he would hate, someone who he would despise, someone whose very mention of would evoke a reaction within, right? This is the puppy kickers of the day for this guy, right? He wouldn't have been happy about this. So we often say good Samaritan as if that was assumed, that any Samaritan is good, or we even just say Samaritan means you're a Samaritan, which means you're good. But if you were to say that back then, that would have made no sense. That would have meant you're not a good person. In fact, you're one of our enemies. You're someone I hate. You're someone I can't stand. And here's the kicker. Jesus says, who was the neighbor? Right? See, often we hear this story and we think, I've got to be like the Samaritan. I've got to get off my donkey and walk alongside. And that's fine if it's your call. But this guy was asking a deeper question. He's saying, how do I do something more? And Jesus says, well, love your neighbor. Who's your neighbor? The one who evokes that reaction within you. The one who pushes you. That is the one you are called to love. If you want to go beyond this little group, if you want to make this world a better place, you need to go and push the boundaries. You need to be involved with those who evoke a reaction within you. You know, he can't even say his name here, right? He says, the one who had mercy. Right? Are there people like that in your life who evoke reactions within you? Whose names you can't even say? How often do we hear people talk about their ex? Right? How often do you hear people talk about, oh, someone I used to be in business with? or someone who I used to associate with. And I've used those three terms because we're in a church service at the moment. But if we were to walk out that door, sometimes not even needing to walk out the door, we use even fruitier terms to refer to our exes, don't we? And, you know, it's not long before we start calling them even worse and worse names. Because you know what? When you name someone, you're saying that we're relationally connected. There's intimacy and there's closeness, right? But when you don't use that name, it means that there is that breakdown of connection. There is that breakdown of relationship. There is that thing that evokes a reaction within you. A couple of weeks ago, I was just walking, minding my own business, saying good morning to a few of the regular punters that I like to say good morning to, when out of nowhere, someone just launched a bit of a racist tirade against me. And I was shocked for a couple of reasons. One is that it hasn't happened for a long time, right? It's been years since I've been, you know, been yelled at. And so I was kind of a bit, I was kind of happy. I was like, wow, that's been a while since that's happened, right? I wasn't grateful for the reaction. The other thing that I've got to tell you is it plunged me back to being 8 years old, right? When I was growing up in Australia, I never felt different just by being there. I was told I was different, you know? No one, I think, wakes up or grows up feeling like there's something wrong with them. That's something we get told in verbal ways and non-verbal ways, and it gets reinforced in usually bad ways, but also in good ways. I used to visit friends' houses and they'd say, John, it's such a novelty to have you over for dinner. Yeah. Oh, okay. And or the worst one was, John, because you're coming over for dinner, I'm going to make curry.
Oh, no.
And you say, oh. I say, please don't, right? My mum makes a great curry. All I want is steak and beans here, please. That's all I want here. And so, you know, they'd pull out that Keynes or that Clive of India. Who's Clive? What was Clive doing in India? Right? Whatever it was wrong, right? Oh, dear. I had to suffer through many guest dinners, you know. I just said, just make a pavlova, that's all I want. Stay in your lane, people. not well, no. No, not well at all. No. So, anyway, you kind of felt different. And I remember getting up every day thinking, how much do I have to give here? How much dignity is this going to require to be ripped from me? And my prayer was, God, give me enough to make it through the day, right? Because that's the lens I began to take into every day. Have I got enough? Can I distract them for long enough? Can I entertain them for long enough, right? Or can I avoid them for long enough in the hope that I won't cop it, and my worst days, maybe someone else will cop it instead of me, so I'll get a break, right? So when I heard that voice and I was flicked back to being 8 years old, I was reacting, right? And that's what Jesus is talking about. If we are serious about making this world a better place, and that is why the Wayside Chapel has always been here and will always continue to be here. And who is the Wayside Chapel? It's all of us in this room. We'll continue to love, even when it hurts. We'll continue to push on. Now, for some of us here, don't get me wrong, when we think of some, we all have them in our lives, when we think of them and we are brought up with, and the pain comes up, if that pain is related to some abuse, the best way we can love them is to love them at a distance, right? I'm not telling everyone to get involved with anyone who's hurt you in your life, right? The best way we can love them is to love them at a distance and forgive them. Why do I say forgive them? I say forgive them because by forgiving them, we will not let the bitterness and the hurt poison our souls. Okay? We need to get to that point. But for some of us, the call is to love those who are difficult to love. God knows we're difficult to love ourselves, aren't we? You know, and that's what I love about the journey of faith. It is not one that leads us to greater power or greater strength. In fact, the journey of faith is quite the opposite. It is a journey into vulnerability. It is the journey into powerlessness. It's the journey into saying, I don't think I know what I'm doing, but I know it's the right thing to do. If we continue to love those who bring up those emotions in us, they will move us. They move us to action. They will move our feet towards one who lay on a cross, not covered in glory, but covered in scars and pain. He is the one who will walk with you, who says, "Fear not, for I am with you. I have called you by name. Child, you are mine." He is the one who we move towards. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him, her, and you will eat with me." That's the challenge for us. So when we hear, "Who is my neighbour?" Can you see how it's so much more demanding than just helping those on the side, as important as that is? We wouldn't be here if we didn't have that ability to open our doors and welcome all into this place. The Wayside Chapel's always had a proud heritage, a proud foundation of saying we are the family of humanity in this place, in this time.